on one of the religions of our country, which is very extensive here in Cuba. We still have two more papers, and we beg of you to only dedicate 15 minutes to each of the presentations. After the two presentations, we'll have a small break. Let's see if the two speakers are disciplined. And now I give the floor to Carlos Piedra. He will speak also on the religious syncretism. We have already had a Catholic. We have had a speech on the origin religion, on the origin of the African religions here in Cuba, and now we will have a Protestant. He is a Presbyterian clergyman, director of the Center of Studies of and Information of Busokoto, and he will speak about the work of the Protestants within the Cuban Revolution.
I will be try to be disciplined. I don't think that it is easy to summarize in a few minutes, say, the history of the Protestant religion in Cuba, which can serve as a background for understanding certain meditations and reflections. However, I do consider that it is fundamental to make reference to those events that can give us a clear idea of the reasons why we could not aspire to a more committed church with the fate and destiny of our people. It is lucky for all of us that I am not an academic theologian. I am merely a pastor. I am a worker for the past 30 years, and reality forces me to refer to my own experiences. I will not refer to theories, theoretical concept. We all know that the origins of the Protestant religion in Cuba was not different from other forms of religion. Catholic religion, as was already expressed, arrived to our shore with the sword of Christopher Columbus. The Cuban natives came into contact with Christ and his doctrine through these settlers, and blessed by the Holy Church in their genocidal and extermination of the native population. Then the Africans arrived with chained, the whip, the stock, separation from their families. All of this served as a framework for all the religious expressions of the African slaves brought to the Americas. This was another sad history, page in the history of Cuba. That's according to, as Miguel said, this shame is for the master. Protestant religion arrived in the past century, trying to open its path in the midst of a peculiar syncretism. In its journey towards Cuban, it was not custodied by swords of the Spaniards, but by U.S. warships, which came to legitimize a policy of economic conquest. The missionaries, according to a Cuban theorician, came as an instrument for U.S. penetration. However, they came with the lofty proposal to perform here in Cuba the old dream of a Puritan society. Of course, this was not possible even in the United States. They were the collaborators of a new assault to the sovereignty and predetermination of our country. Protestant Church was born with congenital disease, much of which have not been eradicated as of yet and still prevail today. The history, which at times repeats itself, has demonstrated that the bourgeois Puritan model was condemned to a failure. We know that the giants of the North, civilized Western and Christian giant of the North consumes 80% of the drug produced throughout the world. It is impossible to know the exact number of alcoholics, and they have one of the highest crime rates in the world. That society has as its feature racial discrimination, which are even observed in the religious congregations. And that was what they wanted for us. That was the model that they brought to Cuba. Together with love for thy neighbor, the hope and the search for human perfection preached by the Bible, they imposed their North-South division, and they taught us a theology which was the result of their own problems that had nothing to do with our own. They made us chant hymns of the 16th century, leaving aside, because they were the guitars and our drums and our own African rhythm. It is not easy to forget, for example, that a Presbyterian church in Cardenas, founded by a southern missionary on November 11th, 1900, opened its door to a black student in 1941 when its founder retired and was replaced by a Cuban. According to the people of Cardenas, at that time, the baseball players who visited the school, if they were blacks, they could not take a bath after a game because they were prohibited from doing so. In the school, we were taught a form of life to which we must be loyal if we wanted to be loyal to Christ and to the gospel. And I will repeat something that I have said before, which teaches us a great lesson. Those of us who are older recall the Christmas trees, which is a European pagan tradition and has nothing to do with the gospel. We had to cover these Christmas trees with cotton in order to imitate snow in a country with more than 100 degrees temperature. They brought a Santa Claus, which is the greatest sales agent in the United States, fostering consumerism and increasing the differences between the privileged, those who could buy what they wanted, and those who did not receive presents, not even from the three kings or from Santa Claus. And we studied well, and we were good students in our schools, and even though we behaved at home. For many years, we celebrated Thanksgiving on the third Thursday of each November in order to thank God in Cuba for the good harvest of the U.S. Farmers. However, no one said anything on April 30th at the end of our sugar harvest. Therefore, we inherited the church discipline, the form of government, the faith, and even the rituals from abroad. Of course, not all were problems and difficulties. We would not be faithful to history if we did not refer to other situations. Some of these men and women gave joy or were integrated to our people with a sincere spirit of solidarity. And as a result of this, some schools, elder home for the elderly, were established to mitigate the hunger of our people. Charity was observed during this decade. Of course, they helped the poor, but they never analyzed why this person was poor. We tried to mitigate the cause of injustice. However, we never took the unjust to the witness stand. So that is how it was, whether we liked it or not. Until the 1st of January of 1959. Therefore, it should not be astounding, the confrontation between the socialist revolution and the church. The absence of theology as the genuine expression, a critical expression of the believer, of his testimony of life, should be interpreted and alien to our own reality and could not even respond to our own concern. We also had an absolute economic dependency, which consolidated the positions of those who required an apolitical system. They wanted to unlink the church from all social process. Many fell in this trap, as was the case with the Catholics several centuries ago when we gave them part of our moral and spiritual heritage. And as a Protestant pastor, I do not like to hear the people of the church when they do not like to hear us talk about St. Augustine or St. Francis of Assisi. However, I will repeat that history repeats itself. We gave to the Marxists and the revolutionary of the country what was ours. We gave to them decades of struggle against poverty, the spirit of rebellion against injustice, the same injustice that led many pastors and believers to join the ranks and file of communists in attaining a revolutionary regime. Many Christians and believers of the rank and file in cases were confronted in a controversy based on the false premise that he had to select to either be faithful to his rank and file or to remain faithful to the enemies of his homeland. The church had undergone many social and charitable activities, and in some cases it had to abandon those because they were Marxist. In these cases, I'm trying to do exactly what the church had been trying to do. We must underline that some comrades contributed to this attitude who did not observe the danger of self-margination. Many devoted their forces to react. When the stampede towards Miami occurred of many pastors and members of the church, then the contradictions between the Protestant church and the state is worsened. Many believers thought that Christ had left Cuba in one of the flights of the community or through Camarioca or Mario. Of course, there were voices claiming a more consistent attitude in accordance to the gospel, and thank God these voices are still listened to. The ideological confrontation became worsened within the structure of the church, and some groups, which is a derogative term, para-ecclesiastical group, were established, and they began to question the most sacred postulates of Marxist dialectics. The Christian Conference for Peace, this Christian student movement of which I was a founder, the Center for Studies of the Ecumenic Council of Cuba, fulfilled their role and tried to increase the awareness of the masses of believers and to exert an influence on the formations of the new generations. We were also accused of trying to sell the church when it was not easy to sell the church, but rather to find someone who was capable of buying it. Some of you may ask yourself, what is there? What are the similarity between the Protestant Church and Malcolm X? I asked myself this question more than a decade ago when I was not familiar with this revolutionary leader. Imperialism sometimes hides truth. The so-called liberty of press, which is supposed to be an important issue of human rights, is still to be seen in the United States. I know that I am not very sage and do not have much knowledge of the thinking of Malcolm X. However, I have thought much about his revolutionary trajectory. I know that there is a great lesson to learn from his life, not only for the Cubans, but those who are of different religion persuasions. I'm not going to discuss if God is Christian or Muslim. I believe in man with the same conviction in which I believe in God. Reason is simple. Man is has been created by God. It is not the mere expression of a monkey. Man is not a domesticated being and alien to human suffering. Man was created a rebel. Up until the original sin, he is the artisan of a better world and willing to give his all for this lofty dream. The other, the frustrated man, the selfish, who does not give a single minute of his time for his neighbor, he is a hybrid. He is the origin of sin. Malcolm X, the one whom we admire, is not a savage with long fangs who eats white children with blue eyes. He is not a bright radical extremist who does not stop until he attains his ambitions. Malcolm X was the strategist, the leader who knew how to find the better path for the fulfillment of his plans and his ideas. He was susceptible to criticism, and he analyzed ideas that were other ideas. We never criticize violence. However, this does not mean that we will always assume a servile attitude. We cannot return kisses when we have been slapped, or will we throw roses against bullets, even though we know.